Kartik 2009, it's class number 13, October 12th, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We're discussing, we just began the Sadhana Bhakti chapter where Rupa Goswami describes Raghunuga Bhakti by citing some key verses. Yesterday we heard some definition of Ragatmika Bhakti, that type of bhakti that's in the hearts of the eternal associates of the Lord, how they're so intensely absorbed in the happiness of Krishna. And we have some notes that we want to read from. Because Raghunuga Bhakti, it says in text 70, it's that bhakti or devotion which follows after the Ragatmika Bhakti, which is found especially distinctively in the Brijvasis, inhabitants of Vrindavan. That was verse 270. Well, there's some notes here. Because the verse uses some key words which are very important to understand. It says, Virajantim abhivyaktam Brijvasi janadishu ragatmikam anushritya ya sa rag anuga Yochate. So this phrase, Virajantim Abhivyaktam, means to manifest. The love, it means that the loving attitude of the Brijvasis is eternally manifest and shining with its own glories. This word Virajantim means existing, shining in its own glories. So the devotees are Ragatmika Bhaktas of Vrindavan. They're Nitya Siddhas. They're expansions of Krishna's personal body. His Srup Shakti, or internal potency. They're not Jiva Shakti. We are Jiva Tattva, Jiva Shakti. And Raghunuga Bhakti means to follow the devotion of these eternal associates. These Ragatmika Bhaktas, really, we say Ragatmika, they're Atma. Their body, mind, hearts, everything is full of rag, intensely colored and intensely attracted and dedicated to Krishna. But actually they're expansions of Krishna's their personal expansions of Krishna. In other words, he becomes his own devotee. Just imagine, you sometimes, a husband thinks, oh, an ideal wife should be like this. And you have some idea what an ideal wife should be. And he's thinking she should be this and humble and submissive and sweet and tender and kind and everything nice, sugar and spice and everything nice. An example, nothing personal. But the best possible wife that a husband could have could be one that he could create himself. He could create out of his own mind, oh, if I had the ideal wife, she would be this tall and this wide and this color eyes and this color hair, and she'd have this personality, and this would be the ideal wife, which of course doesn't exist. Nor does the ideal husband exist. But hypothetically imagine that you could produce a whole fleet of servants. You could produce 20 wives from your own body. You say, yes, wife, boom, patni bhavatu. Oh, very nice, okay, you serve me. And then they're all serving you, and they would be expert servants, and they would be totally dedicated, and they wouldn't have any second mind or any second idea, because they're your creation. They're your personal, you manufactured them. An inventor, if he invents something, it will work and function exactly according to his design. The invention will function exactly according to his design, his will, his design, his input. That's the Ragatmika Bhaktas. They function exactly according to Krishna's will, exactly according to his design and wishes. So they're perfect. Almost sounds like they're robots. But they aren't robots, they're the perfect devotees of the Lord. So the Ragatmikas, they're the one Krishna expands. Because by himself, it's rather boring to remain alone. You can imagine if you're sitting in a room all by yourself for eternity. you get rather bored. You say, oh, there's no one to talk to, there's no one to be with. So then that's Krishna, because it says eko bahusham, from one becomes many. But Krishna is very bored to remain alone, so he becomes many. Actually, Krishna is always many, but due to the limitations of language in terms of describing cause and effect, to describe inconceivable truth, so Shastras explain that there was at one time one Krishna who turned into many. So the term in Shastras, eko bahusham, that one Krishna became many. Because our mind only works in a linear way, or in a time, we work according to time. This is called the world of cause and effect. What goes up must come down. We have this idea, hetu. What is it? Hetu, karan and hetu, cause and effect. If we do something. What do we say? There's a law in physics. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. You must have heard that. I push like that, then something comes back. That's going on. This is called, what's separating this causal, this is called the causal world. Things appear to have a cause here. And what's separating this causal world from the causeless world, we say ahoituki. When bhakti is described, it's described as causeless. There's no cause to bhakti. It just manifests. You can try to trace out the cause. Well, it was the mercy of the Lord. Well, it was something, agyata sukriti I did, unknowing good deeds. Or it was the mercy of devotee. But ultimately, it just happens. It's free, on its own free will. Beyond this material world, there's called paravyom, the Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. And there's no, that's why we say the separation point from the material energy and the spiritual energy is called Karana Samudra, the ocean of cause. Karan. Karan means cause. Samudra means ocean. So here we explain everything. But now we're talking about God, who is the source of this material world and the source of the spiritual world. But then when we say source, then we imply beginning. Like, what is your source? Well, that source means my beginning. My source is my mother and father. Well, what is their source? Their source is my grandfather, and it goes like back and back in time. But that's why we say, the scriptures describe the spiritual world, time is conspicuous by its absence. There's no yesterday, there's no tomorrow, there's not even any today. So then we start speaking like this, oh, I'm getting a headache. Where are we? Are we yesterday? Are we now? Are we tomorrow? No, we're eternal. Huh? Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Na tvaham jatu nasham, na tvam name janadipa. Krishna's telling Arjuna this in the Gita. Hare Krishna. Krishna, so we want to understand, oh, there was Krishna, and how all these gopis come, or how all these Ragatmika bhaktas come. Well, Krishna always existed, and they always existed. But to understand, we say, okay. Because beyond, on one side, Krishna lives on the other side of the causal ocean, Karna Samudra, where everything happens by Yoga Maya, Krishna's will. There's no cause. It's just Krishna's will, which is timeless. And Lord Chaitanya prays, he says, I don't want anything of this causal world. Everything in this world has some cause. So Lord Chaitanya distinguishes that by saying, on one side he's saying, Nadanana Janana Sundaram, Kavitam Vajagadish Kamaye. He says, calm, desire. This desire is only functioning on this world. Bhagavad Bhaktir Hoituki Twai, Mama Jamni Jamani Shre Bhavatad Bhaktir Hoituki Twai. He says, I don't care about liberation, because liberation means that I was bound, and now I become unbound, and there's a cause for me becoming unbound. I was in prison, and I got free, so there's a cause for me getting free. So he says, Mama Janmani Janmani Shri Bhavatad Bhakti Ahoitaki Twai. Bhagavat Bhakti, I want devotion to the Lord, and what is this devotion? Ahoitaki. There's no hetu, no karan. There's hetu is effect, and karan is cause. Ahoitaki apratiyata. There is no cause, there is no effect, it's bhakti. The eternal now. Eternally chant Hare Krishna. Kirtaniya, Sadahari. Sadahari. There was no past, there's no present, there's no future. So there, in the spiritual world, everything's managed simply by Krishna's will, not by the time factor, not by cause and effect. We live in the causal world, our minds work with the Seto and Karana. So when someone introduces, the scriptures introduce the concept of eternality, or a land where there's no cause and effect, and no time, then we go blank. We just blank out. We blow a fuse. So, huh, what? It doesn't fit. We read about it. So everything in the spiritual world is beyond the workings of cause and effect. So it's very difficult for us to understand. Krishna has no cause, he always was. What do we say? Sarva karana karanam, Ishvara parama Krishna, Sachit ananda vigra, anadir adir govinda, Sarva karana karanam, Govinda madhi purusham tamham vajami. It's difficult to translate the word causeless or causeless things into our language. Krishna always exists with his own energies and he enjoys various expansions of himself. And these expansions of Krishna are the Rigatmika Bhaktis. A man marries someone and he expands his energy by producing children. And he enjoys with his different expansions. He's one, and then he finds one lady, and they get married. And they combine, and they produce some expansions or byproducts in the form of children. 1, 2, 3, whatever. Then he enjoys those children or those different expansions. Similarly, Krishna expands his own energy into unlimited different forms and 5 different rasas to enjoy lila, the drama of loving exchanges in the spiritual world. This is a very nice definition. What is lila? Lila is drama. There's so much pathos, there's so much joy, there's so much fear, there's so much astonishment, and bewilderment, and happiness. All these emotions, which we say the drama of life. So the definition of Krishna is that lila means the drama of loving exchanges in the spiritual world with Krishna and his expansions, which means Krishna and himself. Nija rupataya kalabi. Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita abhis tabirya eva nija rupataya kalabi. Go loka eva nivasatya kilatma bhuto. Go vindamadi purusham tamaham vajami. Go loka nivasat. Go loka nivas. Like we have these houses and bungalows, especially in Rajasthan, people often call their houses nivas, Radha nivas, so Goloka nivas. Krishna lives in Golok, in the spiritual world, in his nivas, his place of his own residence, with his nijarupataya kalabi. Nijarupataya. These are kalabi, these are expansions of nijarup, his own body, himself. These are the Ragatmika Bhaktas, which we're talking about, and which we want to emulate, and which we want to hear about, and speak about, and eventually live amongst, and learn from, and become like. That's called Rag Anuga Bhakti. So Rag Anuga means, Rag refers to these Nitya Siddha devotees of Braj. Anuga means to follow, which is a repeat. So when we read about anything, we accumulate some knowledge by reading or hearing someone describe something, hearing something with our ears or reading with our eyes. We receive some impression, some conception, some idea of a new place, of a new presentation, of a new principle or philosophy. Then we can consider it. First there is shravanam, hearing, collecting of knowledge. And then there's the processing, the mental processor they have in computers, I think. Intel processor. Is it something like this? Intel processor. Pentium processor. Is that right? The processor of the computer. So our mental computer, we process the information we collect in the form of knowledge. Then there's sankalpa or vikalpa. We accept it or we reject it. Then if we accept it, then it goes to the next level of processing, the discrimination, where we sort it. It's called the sorting and discrimination aspect. And said, I've received this knowledge, I'm accepting it, And I have to see how will I use this or how will I apply this. Oh, I've received this knowledge about a place called Hawaii. And some pictures came and I saw a movie and there's so many sites over there. I accept this knowledge, this information, and rather I like it. So then if I accept it, which means I like it, then I store it. I store it in my citta. I discriminate. Yes, this is useful. This is beneficial knowledge for me. I will use it. I will store it in my consciousness, and then I will act upon it. I will go there. First knowledge, then acceptance, and then response or action. It's the same thing in Raghunuga Bhakti. We receive the knowledge of the Raghatmika Bhaktas of the spiritual world, Krishna's eternal associates, how they move, how they think, act, what are their bhavas, especially their bhavas, their feelings. Because this is what shapes everything. Feeling shapes motion. Feelings shape our direction. They shape our ideas, how we feel about something, our acceptance. So I really like Raghunath Das Goswami. I really like the way he thinks. I really like the way he sees the world and how he relates to Krishna and how he serves Radharani. I've heard about his different services. I somehow they appeal to my sense of taste, to my sense of spiritual liking, which is called ruchi. So the ability to have spiritual liking or spiritual taste depends on purification of the consciousness. And purification of consciousness is a byproduct of bhajan. Bhajan means bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti. All the anarthas are removed, and then something a relish, an attraction, a taste, a greed awakens for these higher activities and higher exchanges and higher feelings, which are transcendental. They're lokic. But in the beginning, if we have contaminated consciousness and no abhas, a reflection of spiritual taste, we may read the most quote-unquote rasic literatures describing the most intimate exchanges of love and dedication. We say, ho-hum, this is very sleepy material. I'm sleeping nicely by hearing this. It's not registering with me. It's not making any impression. It's not creating any response in my citta. How do you like this book? I don't like or dislike. It's okay, interesting, but not that interesting. I don't want to read it again. So there's no thirst there. There's no awakening of desire to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, which is what Raghunuga is all about. The desire is very, what it says, we hear, we collect the knowledge, then a desire awakens in our heart to perform the same services with the same bhav, feelings, or mood of love and intimacy that they have. To follow their mood, to develop their desire. This is what I call the phenomenon of wanting to be with the beautiful people. These are the beautiful people. Sometimes this term, it's a rather an old cliche from the 70s. When I was more, maybe your age, a lot of you, but we said, oh, the beautiful people. There's a certain group of economically well-off people in the world that are interested in health and happiness and physical well-being, and they're vegetarians and they're very athletic and the beautiful people. They have the good looks and the good breaks in life, and everything seems joyful. The glitter and glamour of Hollywood and Bollywood, and they're quote unquote the beautiful people, but they murder each other also, and they get old and they get diseased and they die and they get divorced and they poison each other, and we say, oh wait a minute, these beautiful people are ugly people, because if anything has one attribute in the material world, then you know the opposite will come, because this is the world of duality. If you're feeling healthy, oh I'm feeling quite good. Then you cross your fingers. Okay, how many days will it be? Will I run days? Will I run months? How long will it be till I fall sick? Backache, headache, bellyache, I step on a thorn. I know I don't want to think about it. It'll come automatically. I don't want to pray for it. It will come automatically. I don't want to worry about it. I want to just enjoy the moment. I want to relish the time that are with me. And then, oh, bang! Oh, I know what's coming. Here it comes. Boom! It's like slipping on the ice and landing on your backside. And you can't walk for 3 weeks because it hurts your pelvic bone and your lumbar vertebrae. So the beautiful people, he says, oh, they're the beautiful people. And all of a sudden they do something or something happens to them to make them ugly. Because as we know it, this is a world of opposites. Night follows day. Fear follows security. Poverty follows wealth. It's like this. Old age follows youth. It's not that you're young and then you get younger. Not that you're born and then you live forever. You're born, you die. And this is the way it is. This is life. This is the material world duality. But inside of us, there's a little bit of... Everyone has a desire, to some extent, to be a beautiful person or to be with the beautiful people. So these are the Ragatmika Bhaktas. The Ragatmika Bhaktas of the spiritual world, they are the beautiful people. Their beauty never fades. Even I use terms, I don't know the exact Sanskrit. Maybe it's Akshay Taza or something. They have this phrase about unfading lotus garland. Maybe you've heard this, read this term. That when Krishna stepped onto the battlefield of Kurukshetra during the Bhagavad Gita, he was wearing an unfading lotus garland. What does this mean? Unfading. Fading means wilting. The flower, you buy a flower and it's fresh and looks a nice color, and you see, like, for example, a red or pink lotus flower. It's very beautiful. Tender, moist, attractive, fragrant. And you have it and someone offer it to the deity, and you're wearing the Mahaprasadam, and you think, oh, this is wonderful. And you hang it on a nail or something, and the next day, what color that red becomes? It becomes purple. The red becomes purple, it wilts, it curls up, it dries out, and about 5 days later, that pink becomes purple, the purple becomes black, and the sweet fragrance becomes rather putrid. So this is what happens. Everything fresh becomes stale. Everything new becomes old. Everything nice becomes not nice. But yes, I read about these beautiful people and a desire arises. We develop a desire, yes, I want to be among these beautiful people in Braj, like Lalita and Vishakha and Rupa Mundri and Rati Mundri. I want to live with them and serve Radha and Krishna in the same way, with the same mood and bhav and feelings of sweet love and intimacy. And this is not only a fleeting desire or a passing momentary, oh, that's nice, but it becomes a consuming and all-consuming, ever-present feeling. Oh, this is what I want. I want this more than anything else. And this is the sign of ruchi. And ruchi, in fact, is the beginning point of Raganuga Bhakti. This desire becomes so, it supplants this desire to be with the Ragatmika Bhaktas, the Ragatmikas. The beautiful people are the Ragatmikas, those whose Atma, or self, the Atma means the self, the mind, the intelligence, the soul, is completely, Rag means colored, is completely colored by intense attachment and intense feelings and desires to please Krishna at every moment. This desire supplants or replaces or consumes all other desires within our mind and consciousness. And then we can truly say, honestly say, with realization and sincerity and surety, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Va Jagadishikame Mama Janmani Janmanishwari Bhavatad Bhakti Rahuita Kitai. I don't have any desire. They're all gone, at least for the most part. The gross, the pressing, the pushing, the gnawing, the powerful, the burning, lusty, consuming desires of the flesh and mind of this material world. Desire for flesh, man and woman. The dunam, wealth, power, influence, enjoyment, travel, clothing, jewelry. The dunam, the sundaram. Popularity, worship, puja, lobe, puj, pratishta, kamani, kanak, pratishta. Koi ne, or kuch ne. I don't want anything. Keval ek itcha, one desire. Ahoituki apratiyata. This is all. Only this causeless service. I want to be with the beautiful people, the eternally beautiful people. Nava yovanam jana. Nitya nava yovanam jana. Those jana, those people that are eternal, and they're ever fresh, and ever beautiful, and ever happy, and ever joyful, and always caring, and always dedicated, and always cooperating with one another, and mutually respecting one another, in an integrated, ever ongoing, flowing movement of harmony, peace, and love. This is the spiritual world. These are the Ragatmika Janas. These are the truly beautiful people that exist on the other side of the causal ocean in Vrindavan. So Raganuga Bhakti means to want to be with the beautiful people. That's why I call this Be with the Beautiful People. That's the title of this section. I want the same mood of feelings of sweet love and intimacy with Radha and Krishna. Just imagine meeting a group of people that are completely free from the cheating propensity. Imagine meeting a group of people, or even one person, what to speak, a group. Meeting one person that's not out to get something, not out to take something. He's not conniving or scheming or planning how to get something from you, or some money, some influence, some friendship, some help. Something. Whenever you can understand in the material world, if anyone comes up to you, they're not coming up to give you something, they're coming up to take something. So the Vaishnavas, they know that, and they're in a receptive posture. They're not offensive entities. Because they're fixed in their service relationship with the Lord, and they see every day and every moment and every person as an opportunity for seva. This is the fullest expression of vairagya. It says, Nirbande Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagya Yuchate. They say, oh, here comes a situation in relationship with Krishna. Here comes a person in relationship with Krishna. So how can I connect all of this with Krishna as his service, and in that way be detached from anything and everyone, at the same time enrich my own relationship of love with Krishna? Nirbande Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagya Yuchate. This being the philosophy, that the underpinning or the foundational root or mool of the Vaishnava's heart and outlook, when anyone approaches him, he says, oh, how may I serve you? So he catches the other person off guard. Because everyone's, as I mentioned a minute ago, if anyone approaches us, they want something. Oh, Prabhu, excuse me, how are you? Fine, everything fine, it's nice. Oh, by the way, can I use your computer? I want to go on internet. Or can you fix my computer? Or can you do this or that? Acha. So it's a mutual, this material world is a mutually exploiting society. I exploit you today, and you exploit me tomorrow. So this is the basic modus operandi of the material world. I remember one devotee, he lived at Radhakund in 1974 until 81 or so. And he was from America. And he was on some kind of a social security money from the government. And he had an arrangement that somehow he was collecting that money and living on that money in India. So American dollars in India, they usually go a long way. and maybe a little bit in America, but it was a lot in India. So he lived in Radhakund, over by Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami's Bhajan Kutir, upstairs in one room. He was famous as Bhakta Richard. He would get, in those days, he was getting something like $500 or $1,000 a month, which even nowadays is about 50,000 rupees. So it was a lot of money. So he would cash that money in Delhi, and it would be a big bag of money because they didn't have 500 rupee notes and 1,000 rupee notes in those days. And he kept it in a big chini bora, burlap sack, jute sack. And he kept it in a little, in his room, like hanging on a hook. And he would, every day, his bhajan was just to be at Radhakund and be very humble and very generous and helping people here and there and chanting japa and living a very austere life. He would do madhukari and very, very nice person. And Prabhupada heard about him in 1974 and 5 when he came to Vrindavan. Some devotees asked him, said, Prabhupada, there's this person, devotee, whatever, person from America, and he lives at Radhakund, and he's like this and that. And maybe we can bring him here. And Prabhupada said, yes, I can meet him. But he never actually had that sukriti. Actually, he took a vow never to leave Radhakund. So he lived here for 8 or 9 years, no visa or anything. And what would happen is that the word got out that he was generous, and he had this big bag of money in his room. So the gundas, local gundas, they would come knock on the doors, hey, and badmash, and they have guns, and where's that money? Give us your money. He says, there in a bag, help yourself. He said, try to leave a little something, because I want to buy some toffees for the kids, and do a little seva here for the Brijvasis. So he said, okay, that's reasonable. So then they would empty the bag out, and they would take, he would have 50,000, they would take 45 or whatever, and leave some, because he was so completely detached and not possessing anything. And they just and he was famous. He was actually well-liked and well-loved by the local people. And so whenever, and every month or so, whenever this money would come in, then the gundas would visit and drain out a good portion and leave him with something. I'm citing this as a humorous short story to show how detached the devotee can be, and he's in the mood of service, as is told when it's describing the Vedic society, that the Brahmins were so detached and so honest that even if an enemy came to their door and they said, what would you like? And they would offer whatever they wanted. And even contemporary times, even up to 1,000 years ago, there's a story of Bilvamangala Thakur. He was from South India. And he was on his way to Vrindavan, and he got attracted somehow to someone, Brahmin's wife. And he followed her home, and then he came to the door, and Brahmin said, what do you want? He said, I want your wife. So it's a rather strange story, it seems to me, but at any rate, he said, all right. He said, I want to see your wife. I mean, I don't think he was offering his wife, take her with you. He said, I want to see your wife. He said, okay. So he called his wife out. He said, this beggar or whatever, this person wants to see you. So the wife came out, and then he asked, of course, for her hairpins and poked out his eyes. There's a story like that you must have heard. The devotees had this mood that I just want to serve Krishna, and whatever comes to me, I'll just serve them. So this is what we're saying. Imagine meeting a group of people that are completely free from the cheating propensity, and they have no ulterior selfish motives. This group of people are fully satisfied in themselves, and they have deep loving relationships among themselves, and they have intense loving relationships with Radha and Krishna. It sounds utopian. It is. It sounds ideal. It is. It sounds like I never seen it in this world. It's not here. It's spiritual. It's in another world. Wouldn't you want to be part of such a group? What else do you want? We hanker for so many things, and we want so many things and so many objects, because we don't get love. We have no love. There's technology and so many things are there to attract our attention and distract us from the real purpose of human life. All these inventions and gadgets take people away from themselves so that people never think about life. They never have an opportunity to think who they are. All these trinkets, gadgets, inventions, they make us forget who we are, they make us forget God. The ultimate result of all the so-called technology and advancement in computers is confusion, tension, anxiety, and dissatisfaction. These are popular modern terms in psychology and psychiatry. Tension, and they advertise for various aspirins and drugs in the market on television. Tension, anxiety, confusion, dissatisfaction. The modern men and women of this world are unhappy. They're lonely because they're devoid of genuine loving relationships. Lord Chaitanya has come to give the gift of Braja Prem. It's interesting because other avatars or incarnations of the Lord, they come, of course, in every age, Satya, Treta, Dwapar Yuga. And they come, Yada, Yada, Yidharmasya, Glanir, Bhavati, Bharata, Bhutanam, and Dharmasya, Tadatmanam, Sri Jamyaham. They come like CBI or FBI. They come to bust everybody. They come to bust the miscreants, arrest the dacoits and gundas, put an end to tyranny, isn't it? Just to kill the demons, etc. To lock up the dictators, to knock off the badmash, and to establish dharma. They come to set things in order. The kid takes the clock and throws it on the floor and all the parts go here and there and the battery rolls out somewhere. And then the mother comes and picks up the parts, puts the battery back in and makes the clock work and tick properly. Now, this is what all the incarnations and avatars do. The clock of the material world gets busted, gets thrown on the floor by some crazy demons, atheistic, agnostic people. So God comes and says, "All right, listen, you stupid." Gives a few slaps, picks up the time clock of the material world and puts it back together again so it starts ticking properly. Yada yada hi dharmasya. There's a dharmasya glani. There's a break in dharma. In the cyclic flow, the time flow, the proper functioning of dharma, religion, the social flow, the flow of society, the flow of the varna, the flow of the varnas, the movement, the ticking and the movements of the varnas and ashrams becomes upset because the second hand gets thrown this way and the hour hand gets thrown that way and the battery gets thrown over there. That's called a disruption. Disruption in the social order caused by negative vibration or the input of demons or atheistic people. So that's what God comes. He comes to establish law and order, isn't it? You trace out the whole Bhagavatam, all the Puranas, that's what they do. And how do they do that? They kill the bad guys and they knock off one party and put Congress in charge. They knock off the demon party and put the devotee party in charge, isn't it? They knock off Duryodhana and the bad guys and they put Yudhisthira in charge. And things run in a godly way and they function quite smoothly and the clock is ticking nicely and everybody's happy and secure and peaceful, in harmony. They establish harmony. They're harmonizers. All the incarnations, they're harmonizers. They're peacemakers. United Nations. United Nations of avatars and incarnations. This is what they do. Or what else do they do? Parichanaya sadhanam vinat. They deliver the good guys and beat up the bad guys. Parichanaya sadhanam vinashaya chadiskritam. Discrete vinashaya. Discreti, the bad workers. People are working badly. They're not harmonious workers. They're troublemakers. They're upstarts. Revolutionaries. Hey! You're going against the flow. You're speaking against the town hall. You're a rabble rouser. You're a revolutionary. You're trying to break the harmony, create a new order. You're upsetting too many people. Hey, pop, pop. So they knock them off, vinash. And they deliver the sadhus. The sadhus and saintly people are crying. So basically the incarnations and avatars, they come to wipe tears. They come to wipe the tears of the devotees. They come to wipe the tears of the devotees and wipe out tyranny. They wipe out the tyranny of the dictators and atheists, and they also wipe the tears from the eyes of the devotees. This is Parichanaya Sadhanam, Vinashaya Tindridiskritam. That's it, nothing more. Well, what does Patita Pavanavatar Gauranga Mahaprabhu come to do? He says, I don't care about these dictators. I'm going to turn the dictators into premies. I don't care about the rogues and rascals and drunkards. I'm going to turn the rogues and rascals and drunkards into premies. I don't care about tigers among men, or monkeys, or pigs, or dogs. I'm going to turn them all into premies. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gorja Se Nama. So he is the avatar of love. He's the Gauranga Mahaprabhu. He is the avatar. He's come to give. He's not come to pick up the pieces, put the time clock back together, restore the Varnashram system. He says, forget about it. Just chant, dance, and love God. Because this is the age of Kali. This is the age of Shudras. This is the age of darkness. Darkness means Shudras. The age which is ruled by ignorance. Kali Yuga is the age which is ruled by ignorance. Ignorance means darkness. This is darkness and ignorance are synonymous. So Lord Chaitanya says, all right, this is the age ruled by ignorance, and people that are ignorant means they're tamasic, they're Shudras, and Shudras like to get intoxicated. This is their propensity. And when they get intoxicated, what do? They sing and they dance. So Lord Chaitanya said, all right, I'm more clever than all of you. I'm going to get you all intoxicated on Krishna Prasad, which is my love. It's Krishna's love, Krishna Fela. You take Krishna's Prasad, which is the saliva from Krishna's lips, because he eats it first, and then he empowers it and imbues every bite with his saliva, which is his kiss. His kiss is his love. And lover's kiss, they exchange saliva, Fela, Krishna Fela. So Krishna, we offer our kiss to Krishna in the form of kheer. The kiss of our kheer we offer to Krishna. This is nice. The kiss of our kheer we offer to Krishna, and he accepts it and draws us near with his kiss in return. Our kiss is our offering. Patram pushpam palam toyam yo me bhakti prayachati. Tadaham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatvanah. Krishna says, he who offers me anything with a kiss, I accept it and kiss him in return. Isn't this the translation of Gita? But if you want to get right down to it, we have all the tapatud and the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, the prasadam of the Lord is mixed with Krishna Fela. This is the word. And Fela means saliva. How do you get saliva? By rubbing someone's sika? You rub someone's sika, you can get saliva? You rub their fingernail? Is it like this? No, you have to be chumbika, chumbak. Chum have to kiss. This is the exchange of love. We take Krishna prasadam, and what happens? We become intoxicated by the lips of Krishna. Like the gopis are saying, oh Krishna, when you kiss us, we become intoxicated. Now the Venu and Murali are kissing your lips, and the Venu is becoming intoxicated, unmad. And he's singing, and he's making all these mad ragas, and you're playing all these unmad ragas. Utam mada. Mada means intoxication, mada. Utam means the topmost expression, the absolute intensity or zenith of madness, total craziness. Utam mada becomes unmada. Unmada rag. So Krishna's playing the murli, and the murli's chumbaka, drinking the nectar from Krishna's lips, and that nectar is transforming into shabda, rasa. Rasa, which means nectar, liquid of Krishna's lips, the Krishna Fela, is translating the shabda, or transforming the shabda. Shabda means sound vibration. It's called Murlivad. Murlivadana. Vad means like Nokia Vad, the sound of the Nokia. Venovad. And then that shabda comes through and enters the ears of the gopis, and they become mad. And it's called, they become Unmadani. Unmadani Radha. It's the name for Radha. Unmadani. She becomes totally mad, and that's called Divyonmad, Mahabhav. She becomes totally mad. The sound of Krishna's flute accelerates and maddens her heart to the highest pitch of transcendental ecstasy. And it's called, and she becomes known as Unmadani, Unmadani Radha. And Krishna intoxicates the entire universe with the waves and vibration of his flute playing. And when you're intoxicated, then you sing and dance. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, unlike any other avatar, every other avatar, an incarnation of the Lord, they've come to set things straight, to establish world order, to kill demons, to reestablish Dharma. But Lord Chaitanya is not concerned with any of these things. He has come simply to give prem. It's called Gauranga Prem Avatar. He is the golden avatar of divine love. He doesn't care about setting things straight. He doesn't care about Varnashram Dharma. He doesn't care about killing demons. His only business is turn everyone into a Premi Bhakta. And he comes in Kali Yuga, which is the age of ignorance and intoxication. It's the age of Shudras. This is the age of darkness, which means Shudras. Shudras means lack of knowledge. Shudras means ignorance, as we mentioned for those who came late. Shudras are only interested in intoxication. And when you're intoxicated, all you want to do is sing and dance. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has intoxicated everyone with Krishna Fela, the taste of Krishna's lips, which is the ultimate ras. And one tastes Krishna's lips, which is the chumbika, Krishna chumbika, or the rasa of Krishna's lips coming in prasadam, then he becomes intoxicated. And then he hears the venonad, the sound of Krishna's flute in the form of the holy name. Then he becomes thoroughly intoxicated, and what does he do? Like every Shudra, he sings and dances. But he sings the holy name and dances in transcendental euphoria, and this is called Sankirtan Yajna. This is the Dharma for the age of Kali. Very interesting. This is the gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The pleasure and bliss of love is seen in the pastimes of Krishna with his pure devotees in Braj. This is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's great gift to humanity, that we can experience this, the bliss of spiritual love, which Krishna and his confidential devotees experience. Because Raghunuga Bhakti is all about experiencing the bliss in the hearts of the Ragatmika Bhaktas. This is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where we're just starting now the discussion of Raghunuga Bhakti. So that's why Lord Chaitanya, it says that Raghunuga Bhakti Prachar, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has come for a unique and special purpose to this world. Yada yada hi dharmasya paritranaya sadhanam. We already described this over the last 20 minutes. This is not the business of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's Chanavatar. He's hidden, because the most secret thing is love. This prema is hidden in the hearts of the devotees, but Krishna has come as Gauranga Mahaprabhu to expose it. He's come to expose the hearts of the Brijbasis. This rahasya prema of the Brijbasis, this most secret and confidential highest love of Shringar Ras of the Brijbasis, this Madhurya Bhav, which has been hidden from every acharya and every Sanatan Dharmas in India since the beginning of time, has been made wide open, has been broken open and revealed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and freely distributed to drunkards, to dacoits, to shudras, to tigers, to animals, to everyone. It's called the Prem Yuga. It's Kali Yuga. This is called the Prem Yuga, the time of Lord Chaitanya's advent. It's called Prem Yuga. This is not Dharma. This is not Dharma Yuga. He's not the Dharma Yuga avatar. He's a Prem Yuga avatar. And Kali Yuga. This is what distinguishes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's why he's hidden, because his purposes, his intentions, his activities are totally hidden from the greatest scholars and acharyas. And what is this? Gita is Upanishad. It's telling that avatars come for this purpose. Krishna comes for this purpose. So this mysterious avatar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what he's doing is very secret and very hidden. We don't see this. We see yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutanama dharmasya parichranayam saranam. Okay, every avatar comes for this, every incarnation comes for this, but he comes for something different. This is chana. This is something hidden. Where is it telling that avatars come to give love? That they come to give braj bhakti? Krishna prema pradayate? I don't see. At best, any avatar, any lila guna avatar, etc., from beginning of time, at best they give someone moksha. Dharma. And this is all within the Vedic paradigm. This is all the standard offerings of the Sanatan Dharma, or Vedic paradigm of the ancient Shastras, Shrutis and Smritis. Dharma, art, kam, moksha. But prema? This is called Panchama Purusharta. Everywhere the Vedas are describing Chatur Purusharta. Chatur Purusharta. There are four desirable objects of this world, or of human attainment, are only four. Now you're saying a fifth thing? That there's Panchama Purusharta? That there's a fifth goal, a fifth valuable attainment of human life? Where is this? This is not in Shruti. This is not in Smriti. This is not in Itihas or Puran. This is bogus. No, this is kripa. This is a hoituki. This is a hoituki kripa of Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come. Take it, take it, take it. Don't think about it. Don't try to figure it out. Don't rationalize it. Don't look for support in Shastra. You won't find it. It's too secret. If you use your logic or brain, you'll disqualify me. You'll say I'm only a pundit. You'll say I'm a human being. You'll say I'm a Mishra from Bengal. You can't trace me out in the Vedas. I'm too secret. I'm Chana Avatar. Just believe in me. Just take this prema. And the forerunner of this idea of love of God is actually Jesus Christ, which is very interesting. He actually carried some drops of the conception of Mahaprabhu. And it was 2,000 years ago. He came also as an avatar of love. But people, they couldn't, they just nailed him, as they say. They crucified him. But what he was saying, he said, forget all this Dharma, forget all this Orthodox Judaism. Just follow me and love God. Love the Lord thy Father with all thy thoughts, words, and deeds. Jesus was a prema avatar. He came in the Kali Yuga 2,000 years ago. But he was ahead of the game. There's so much an analogous situation, or the activities and teachings and life example of Jesus Christ and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because all the Jews were saying, who are you? How you say you're the Son of God? I don't see you anywhere in the Old Testament. There's no description of Jesus. The Christ, the Son of God, you're an imposter, you're a bogus. Hey, hang him up. And the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everyone's Sarvam Bhattacharya, the greatest logicians, the greatest scholars. Who is this? What are you saying is God? You people are all fanatics. You're fishermen. You're Bengali fishermen. Like the fishermen of Jerusalem. But eventually, it's indicated that those great seers of truth, they understand it. Yes, Radha and Krishna have come to give this great gift of prema. And this Raghunuga Bhakti, which he came as, this is part and parcel, that gift of prema, braja prema, he came to give. He came to give the prema in the hearts of the Ragatmika Bhaktas and the process to attain it, which is Raghunuga Bhakti. That we can experience the bliss of spiritual love of Krishna and his confidential devotees' experience. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is different from all the avatars and all the incarnations and acharyas of Vedic Dharma. Only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and no one else, before or after, taught the way to how to attain Braj Bhakti by showing the path of Raghunuga Bhakti. If we want to realize the full potential of human life, we must become a Raghunuga Bhakta. We have the potency, the Shakti, the power within us to achieve love for Krishna, the topmost personality. Otherwise, why would he propagate it? Why would it be presented? Why would it be offered? Why would it be given? Namo Mahavadanaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. How can, it's like giving seeds, putting seeds in the fire. I have seeds of mangoes, and I just go around putting them in fires. Everywhere I see a fire, I put a mango seed in it. Does that make any sense? I put a mango seed in fire, it will become roasted and burned, and no tree will ever come out. But if I put a mango seed in earth, then a tree will come out and fruits will be produced. Right? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's distributing. He says, Namo Mahanma Krishna Prema Vardayate. He's distributing Krishna Prema to human beings, because human beings have the potential to manifest Prema, not insentient beings or dead matter. So we have the inherent potential within our Atma, because that is part of our Atma, although it's Anu, is extremely atomic in dimension or in capacity, but it becomes surcharged by the Kripa Shakti of the Lord. That potency of Anu, Anu Prem or Anu Chit, has this slight, you can say, potential tendency to manifest love of God. It's called Satchitananda. It's in nature, although very minute. On its own, it will not produce, but when it's invigorated by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his Premi Bhaktas, then the Prema will manifest from the heart of the devotee. The heart of the Tattastha Jiva has the fertile field. He has the potential field in the heart to manifest Krishna Prema. Not stone. Krishna Prema will not come out of stone, not come out of fire, not come out of water. It will come out of the Tattastha Jiva. We have the potency, the potential to achieve love for Krishna. Most people are wasting their energy trying to satisfy someone in this material world. Very interesting concept. Most people are wasting their energy, which means their life, trying to satisfy someone in this material world. Everyone is looking for the ideal person to love, the perfect man and woman. In actuality, everyone is looking for Radha and Krishna. Every man is looking for Radha, and every woman is looking for Krishna. Because every jiva is looking for the opposite polarity. Ultimately, all jivas are a negative polarity. They're prakriti, and they're looking for the positive polarity, negative and positive, purush. Krishna is the ideal perfect person. He has all the qualities within him to attract us. Raghunuga Bhakti is the process of how to attain love for such a person. Sri Krishna, reality the beautiful. Pure love is such that the devotee can even control Krishna. If we have the desire to be with loving, sincere people with pure hearts, we can then develop the desire to follow this process of Raghunuga Bhakti. Now, this is what I call the desire to be with the beautiful people. The beautiful people are the Ragatmika Janas. The Ragatmika Janas of the spiritual world. The Rupa Mandris, the Rati Mandris, the Lita Sakis, Vishaka Sakis. Their pranam mantras are written here and there. Their physical descriptions are written here and there. Their bhavas and feelings are written here and there. Their pastimes are written here and there. Their descriptions are given in a basic way in many shastras. And you put it all together with your own desire and your own greed, with the proper guidance, then it will manifest something called mercy, by which one can begin the process of Raghunuga Bhakti. This is the introduction, which is the commentary on verse 270, Part 1, Chapter 2, verse 270 and 271. Raghunuga vivekartam ado ragatmiko chite. In order to define Raghunuga Bhakti, first Ragatmika Bhakti should be discussed. We've been doing that. We've been discussing it. And tomorrow we'll discuss text 272. Ishte sorasiki raga paramavishtata vavet tanmai yabhaved bhakti shastra ragatmiko dita. Knowledge creates desire. Desire moves the mind. The mind moves the chitta. The chitta gives shape to the intelligence. The intelligence discriminates and creates movement. And one begins to move on a new path or a new practice.